Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
Okay, good evening, everybody. This is Nemenha Radio. I want to give thanks to Ignacio Garcia and With Insights. He's made this possible for us, and I just want to give him kudos. Thank you so much. And I'm here with, this is Chief Cloudpiler, by the way, in case you were wondering. I'm here with Chief Wellamutkin, and we have a special guest star in the office tonight. We have one of our students.
You had to know this was coming.
Suzanne Roberts, from visiting with us from California. She's going to be one of our master apothecaries in California. Thank you for being here. Speech, introduction.
I'm happy to be here.
Too far away from the microphone. Can't be heard, but she's here. So she's going to be, you know, giving us ideas and telling us what to say and reminding us of some of the things that we talked about and questions and that sort of thing. We were working today, and the subject of fatigue and sleeplessness came up, and we hear this. I mean, how often do we hear this in the clinic?
Almost always with fatigue.
Almost always. Yeah. I mean, not almost always, but you know what is interesting to me is that there are many, many causes of sleeplessness, and only one of them is worry and concern and stress. Well, and depression.
Well, yeah.
You know. You think of somebody who's got, you know, we used to say insomniac, somebody who couldn't sleep, mm-hmm. but that's different. That's different than sleeplessness or disturbed sleep. Suzanne had disturbed sleep last night, and there was a definite reason for it after we interviewed and we talked about what had gone on. So remind me, Suzanne, what happened? You had an acid-forming dinner. Now, Suzanne is on the road, so, you know, if you think, you know, working out your diet and, you know, really getting a diversity of nutrient at the same time as getting an alkalizing or a neutral mm-hmm. to alkalizing diet is difficult at home. Imagine going on road for 2 weeks. You know, the resources are just hard to come by.
Limited.
Yeah, and so it happened that, and we've had kind of a long go, and it's been stressful, and a lot of things to learn, a lot of things to remember. And so you go to bed. What'd you have for dinner?
Brussels sprouts, potatoes, and bacon.
Okay, so what's wrong with that?
Brussels sprouts, potatoes, and bacon. Brussels sprouts are gross. That's what's
wrong. No, Brussels sprouts are awesome.
Brussels are delicious.
They're delicious, but there are a couple of...
You have to overcook them and load them with garlic and onions and butter and salt and pepper to make them edible.
Oh, come on. Get over it. Get over it.
My only cooking option was an electric skillet.
That's true.
I only had one temperature.
Right. So you had an electric skillet. So you had Brussels sprouts, which is really quite good food. But any vegetable, fruit, or grain or whatever, if you overprocess the thing, is going to become acid-forming no matter what it is.
Right.
And so very often by the time you've cooked a Brussels sprout down to where it's edible, which is where I like it, that caramelized, oh, it's so good. When you actually overcook it, it makes ambrosia out of it. It's actually kind of acid-forming because you have over-processed it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Brussels sprouts that are over-processed but really, really yummy.
Debatable.
You know, two against one, you're out. You're done. Majority rules in this office. And then you had what?
Potatoes.
And so how did you prepare the potatoes?
I put all three ingredients in the electric skillet, set it to 325, and put the lid on.
So you put all three ingredients, the Brussels sprouts, the potatoes, and what was it, cabbage?
Bacon.
And you put it all together in a skillet.
Really good.
Yeah, it sounds good, doesn't it? You put all those ingredients together in a skillet, and you put the lid on it. At what temperature did you say?
325.
So I put it at 325, so superheat it. I put $325 down on my sheet. I'm taking notes here. 325 degrees Fahrenheit, and how long did you... And you put the lid on it, and you cooked it for how long?
Well...
48 hours.
Took way longer than I thought. I thought the bacon would be the quickest, so everything else got overcooked.
Everything got overcooked,
probably
so...
Probably 40 minutes.
40 minutes.
And not an electric,
I was just guessing.
And not electric skillet cooker.
Not a
I
skillet
have no
chef.
No idea
yeah.
how long
Okay, so what you end up with is Brussels sprouts that are way over-processed.
Mm-hmm.
You've got potatoes that are probably cooked about as much as we normally
usually
cook potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody eats raw potatoes anywhere, except in South America where they eat raw potatoes all the time.
My kids used to when we had a garden.
And that's how you're supposed to eat raw potato. And there's bacon in there as well. And so what you end up with is Brussels sprouts over-processed is acid-forming. Net acid forming. Potatoes, when you cook them, is like eating white processed sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got sugars, high carbohydrate, higher than any grain food that you could possibly eat, even higher than Danish. So you should have had the Danish. If you'd had the Danish, you'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bacon, too true. Bacon is, now was this cured bacon?
All uncured in the stores these days.
See, I don't buy that.
Well, that's what the label says.
Well, that's
and I don't know my bacon well enough to know.
Yeah, you know.
I'm not a bacon eater.
Yeah, bacon that is uncured is just pork strips.
Mm-hmm.
Bacon is bacon because it's cured in brine and all kinds of nasty garbageness. So, but this is uncured, but no matter how you look at it, when you cook a fatty meat product, you're not going to end up ever with a neutral or alkalizing food. So why not? I mean, there's nothing you can do with bacon to make it itself neutral or actually alkalizing. Why is that? What's wrong with it? Is it an evil food? Should we simply not eat it at all?
No, no.
So what about it makes it so acid-forming?
Too high of protein concentration, too high of fats concentration.
Proteins and fats, that does not make protein and fat poison. It just means that we've got to think about what to put with it in
mm-hmm.
order to balance out its acid-forming potential, right? Now, here again, we're not talking about acid foods. We're not talking about alkaline foods, as far as I'm concerned. There's no such thing. And Jonathan, why do I say that? I mean, I'm not just saying that because I'm egotistical. There's a reason. Well, I am egotistical and conceited, but I'm not saying it because I'm egotistical and conceited. But there is a reason for that, and it's all in the math. What is it about meat that makes it always, every time, acid-forming and not anywhere near neutral?
We require high concentrations of acids to process high concentrations of proteins and fatty acids.
You know, it isn't even that, because the acids that we use to process the proteins are already in our system. They're there already,
yeah.
Not making it up. Well, what happens is that there's a metabolic waste in the proteins
mm-hmm.
and meats that is not avoidable, that we have to remove. And as long as that's in our body, it is actually an acid-forming potential.
We're talking the uric acid.
We're talking
roots.
About
yeah.
proteins. Protein metabolism requires the production of urea
mm-hmm.
and the uric acid, and that has to be removed effectively.
That's what I said.
No, it isn't
we
what you said.
Acids, yeah.
We produce those acids, but it's not in digestion. It's in the metabolism.
I didn't say digestion.
Oh, well, whatever. When you break a protein, you end up with its breakdown
right.
products.
Yeah.
Those breakdown products were in the protein itself. So there isn't any way around it, but there is a way to balance that, and there is a formula. For every 4 ounces of meat that you eat a corresponding, not 4 ounces, but a corresponding alkalizing amount of some vegetable
mm-hmm.
or something else. For example, if it's kale, you'd eat about 8 to 10 ounces of wilted kale. So now that doesn't mean, I should say this, is 8 to 10 ounces of kale that you've wilted. And when you wilt it down, it comes down to about a serving, right?
Yeah, usually.
So you measure out 8 to 10 ounces of kale that you got out of the garden or wherever, and then you wilt it, cook it with some
mm-hmm.
garlic and some salt and some amazing butter, and it's just gorgeous tasting. But it wilts down to what would be a kind of a large serving of greens on your plate. That will make the meat, the 4 ounces of meat that you're eating, neutral. No acid-forming potential there. And then you get all the great protein, you get all those awesome fats, mm-hmm. the right kind of fats, especially since we're understanding that this is like, how do you feed this is a free-range hog grown by cousin Bob next door, right? And the hog's name was Stewart. You know all these things about the hog, right?
No more Portlandia for you.
No more Portlandia for me. I love Portlandia. Okay, so we know about, I mean, this is real food. This is real bacon, yeah. Not the bacon that you buy on the road when you're traveling, but we're going to assume the real bacon. Now, here's the dig. Eat that acid-forming meal after you've had a lot of stress, going to school for 2 weeks and lots of expectations and, you know, getting picked on because you're the lowest person on the totem pole and all of that. And then, you know, you're wiped out because we've also been commuting back and forth to where Suzanne was.
Yeah.
Her motel is not in town here. It's up where we live. So, you know, you're beat, worn out, and you eat an acid-forming meal, and you go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And Suzanne, what did you experience?
Not a whole lot of sleep.
Not very much sleep. No, and it gets worse. We had a little breeze. Now here where we live, when the wind blows, I mean, you all know, it blows. And we have tornadoes, and it's noisy. And even when there isn't a tornado, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes our oak trees will bend, they'll whip in the wind so much that their branches will touch the ground on one side and then whip over and touch the ground on the other. I've seen this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Bam, you know, they'll hit the ground on both sides. And
we call that a breeze.
That's wind.
Yeah.
Okay? And when that happens, you have the whole forest making this wah sound, you know. And sometimes it comes in when a wind gust approaches,
mm-hmm.
you can hear it like
before it gets you, like a freight
train, especially this time of year because it's losing all the acorns.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Gatling guns. So here's Suzanne in
pretty cool
in her motel room, and there's a wind. And it was a gust of wind. It was which I guess you don't have in San Francisco, huh?
It was a little more than that.
A little more than that.
It's like the soundtrack from Twister.
There was a gust. There was a kind of a low pressure system that comes in, and on the edge of the systems that come in, it's kind of noisy. And then when it leaves, just that western edge when they go by, it's kind of noisy. So
and she's close to the lake. The lake puts out some heavy wind.
It creates some weather. So then you've got your acid-forming food that your body's trying to take care of, and then you get this rush of adrenaline. Oh, no, the tornadoes, we're going to die. Yeah. So you calm down a little bit because you realize, oh, how embarrassing. It was just a gust.
Sky's clear.
The sky's clear. Not rain. And then you said there was some other noise.
Oh, no.
The creepy noises. Now, this place where she's staying is kind of funny. It's an old place, and it's been owned by a lot of people. It's been for sale and mm-hmm. bought and for sale and bought. And I guess you said the people who live there now are kind of young, and they're sweet, and they're nice. They probably know nothing about the place, right? There's ghosts there, ghasts and hanes, ghasts and hanes. And so you've got from the creepy horror movies where you have the old metal sign at the gas mm-hmm. station swinging in the wind. What noise did it make? And clanking, bang. You know, you're just getting to sleep and bang. It's okay. But you have noises in San Francisco. You can't tell me your neighborhood's not noisy.
No, that was just part of the fun.
Just part of the fun.
It didn't keep me up.
It was the ghosts. Okay, but what happens is your body, every single cell in your body actually has a little mini brain, and
except for the red corpuscle.
You're right, the corpuscles, the alleles, or the organelles of our body don't necessarily have a little brain, but every single cell that has the mitochondria
mm-hmm.
has a little bit of a brain, and they aren't discovering this, but what is being studied and discovered by researchers, it was me, my foot was in the wrong spot, is that your cells know from 1 minute to the next really what is going on. And it's one of the reasons that we can adapt. We can change things in our body and in our environment. We're very adaptive. We're not as adaptive as the bacteria and the virus and the fungus, but, you know, we're still a little bit adaptable. And that's because there's brains in every cell. The thinking that goes on in our body is not just in our heads. Okay, so there are levels, right? There's levels of thinking and cognition and that sort of thing. But your body knows when something is not right. And one of the causes of sleeplessness can be when your pH drops very, very low,
mm-hmm.
lower, much lower than it ought to. Now, one of the things we look at in the office here under the using dark field videography is we look at the flora of the blood. Now, that sounds funny. The microbiota, the endobiont, the probiotics mm-hmm. in the blood. We look at that, and we can tell essentially pretty close to where you are on the pH strip, if you were to test your pH,
mm-hmm.
by the level of development of certain of the bacteria in your blood. When your pH is right there in that sweet spot, that sort of 7.0, 7.2, 6.8, right there in that wonderful kind of alkaline to ever so slightly acid range, those little biota, those microbes, are very small. They're little dancing dots, and they're really only big enough to act like garbage collectors. They run around in the serum, and they eat garbage, and they not even garbage. Often it's food that's still too big mm-hmm. to get into our cells. They reduce it in size small enough so that it can, so the nutrients can actually pass through the receptor sites into the cells. Or they also spend their time cleaning up garbage. And thirdly, maybe more importantly, they spend their time competing with other bacteria, which is really cool. That is a really cool mechanic there. And, you know, the guy or gal or whoever group, the small working group that thought of that originally, is that the permaculture, right? Small work groups are good. 5 to 7 people make the best work groups. Really good idea. But when the pH drops below that sweet spot, you know, you get down into 6.7, 6.5, mm-hmm. these little microbes grasp hands. The chemical parameter allows them to combine into colonies, and those colonies no longer eat very small things. They require larger things to eat. And that's why we really don't see the larger combinations normally. We don't expect to reasonably see them, or I should say we don't reasonably expect to see them very often until a person has died.
Except we do.
We're sitting here in class and we're looking at Suzanne's blood or him, and lo and behold, in this new sample,
mm-hmm.
we see rod forms, ribbon forms, and forming senescents, which are actually much larger forms that have created cell wall, which is something that you don't normally see until after a person dies. See, when you die, no matter who you are and what you died from, hangnail, you know, getting hit by a truck, falling out of an airplane, it doesn't matter. When you die, about 40 or so minutes after you die, your pH will have dropped down to about 6.5, no matter who you are, no matter what you died from. And then in cyclones, in regular drops, like stepping down the stairs
mm-hmm.
in cyclones, your pH will drop. It doesn't go down in a nice smooth bell curve. It goes down in layers in a sequence, so we call cyclodes. And it helps to determine time of death, how long you've been dead, along with, you know, lividity and liver temperature and that kind of thing. But here we are looking at Suzanne's blood. Poor Suzanne, she's sitting here listening to me talk about her on the radio. And we have some of the things in there that you normally would see in a dead person. How'd that feel?
Quite sure I'm still alive.
I can see you're sitting there, still alive.
A little concerning, but not unexpected, given how I felt. I felt awful.
A little crazy. Yeah, you were not feeling very good. But normally we get up from a sleepless night or when our sleep is disturbed. Or well, yeah, of course you're not going to feel very good, right? But in this case, every cell in your body knew that your pH was tanking. And that is very often the case, very often the thing that will keep you awake. Why would your body want you to be awake, do you think, in that situation?
Well, if you're awake, you have to eat.
You might eat something. It's that simple. You just might break down and eat something, and chances are you might eat something alkalizing, although, I don't know, there's just the pizza, the pastry. I mean, what do we eat at night? It's munchies, right?
Yeah.
And when you get up in the middle of the night, you're not going to fix a meal.
It's usually something fatty or salty or, you know,
something
carbs,
left over out of the fridge,
carbs,
right?
Yeah,
left over out of the fridge.
Something to fill the stomach without being a full meal, because you're not really hungry when you wake up in the middle of the night.
No, well, besides that, who wants to make a meal in the middle of the night? You just don't do it. Think about that. If you suffer from sleeplessness or disturbed sleep often, it might be a very good idea to have something in the fridge to whip up in a smoothie, or, you know, just sit and munch some celery or carrot sticks,
or a ripe apple.
A ripe apple, a ripe orange.
Which can also...
At home, I've done this, and I go right back to sleep.
It does. It you would think, oh, I'm putting that in my stomach, and there's going to be the acid.
It's going to rot.
I'm
going to
get
sour.
I'm going to get heartburn. Yeah. I'm going to be right back. No, not usually. When you take something that is alkalizing and you've been sleepless or your sleep has been disturbed, very often it just settles you right down and you go to sleep. That is really something to think about when you are sleepless.
I always thought it was blood sugar.
Blood sugar is one of those things we're going to talk about. Yeah. There are a number of things that are not necessarily associated to depression or work expectations or the relationship or whatever. All these things that are truly mental.
Adrenal fatigue.
Oh, yeah. Adrenal fatigue.
I can't help it. I have to.
Adrenal burnout.
I've got to stick that one in there.
Now, come on. What? I got to pause. I got to pause. You sidetracked me.
Sorry.
What is adrenal fatigue? What is adrenal fatigue? I mean, you got to tell me. Somebody's got to tell me what adrenal fatigue is, as often as we hear about it.
From what you hear, you are very, very tired. You have fatigue, lack of motivation, sleeplessness. Your thyroid, your adrenals, they're just not putting out enough of these hormones, so you're super stressed.
So you're,
and that's pretty much it. Adrenal fatigue. Your adrenal glands are tired and worn out, so you're stressed all the time because you can't handle the stress.
So what you're telling me?
You have anxiety and fatigue and sleeplessness because your glands are in fatigue.
So when I'm fatigued
or burned out.
Oh, adrenal burnout. Yeah. That's even worse. When I'm fatigued, get me to the end of a Taekwondo, you know, evening workout, and I can barely drag myself to the car back when I could go to those workouts. That's fatigue.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the adrenal glands have gone through a workout, maybe for months, and now they're just going home to mama. They're just not functioning. Is what everybody's suggesting, isn't
that's
it?
That's what's being
adrenal burnout. Yeah. Adrenal burnout means your adrenal glands
are shutting down.
Can't produce what's needed to do what?
Oh, to produce your energy.
But wait a minute.
To help you handle stress, manage stress.
But wait a minute. Wait a minute. The adrenals don't produce energy.
I know.
You're eight.
I know.
The energy produced in the body is at a cellular level. That's happening in the mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the citric acid cycle. What's now called the citric acid cycle.
Yeah.
It used to be called the ATP, the energy management system of the body. But that doesn't have anything to do with the adrenals. What do the adrenals do?
Regulate your flight and fight. Fight?
Yeah.
Fight or flight?
Yeah. Fight or flight.
One of the things they do is they regulate the hormones produced,
mm-hmm.
to control inflammation.
We have to have a certain number of the of certain kinds, certain number of hormones, certain kinds of certain number of steroids. We have, these are glands that are constantly regulating and producing all these little things.
Okay, so if your adrenals, and we know this, the corticosteroid hormones, and there's about 30 of them produced by the adrenal glands right above the kidneys, if one of their major purposes in life is to produce hormones to reduce, that are intended to reduce and control inflammation, that really suggests that inflammation is a given. We will have inflammation. We do have inflammation. Inflammation may not be the next new fad. It may not be the biggest thing, the worst devil in the pantheon, you know, coming down the pike. We need to think maybe a little differently about inflammation generally, and we'll have to segment, we'll have to, what's the word, compartmentalize our inflammation. Probably, because it, you know, anytime we get into those kind of generalities, we risk really making some mistakes. And so one of the big issues with the adrenals is to produce hormones that control inflammation. Mm-hmm. If we don't have them, we would just inflame to death. We simply would die without them. So that's one big issue. So when you have adrenal burnout, what's going on with inflammation?
Well, it's supposed to be out of control.
With adrenal burnout?
Mm-hmm. Because it's not putting out enough of the corticosteroids to main to keep the inflammation down.
You know what? Most of the people I've seen who are complaining of adrenal burnout do not look like they're blowing up with inflammation.
Not usually.
They don't look like they're going to explode out their lungs and their behind. It's just not happening. I mean, this is what happens in what happened in the Spanish flu. Was a, one of the things that the Spanish flu was able to do was to control the cytokine storm and absolutely control inflammation so that it just ran away. And you would assume that if you have organs that produce anti-inflammatories that are no longer producing anti-inflammatories, you'd have the same effect.
Yeah.
Very similar, because much of digestion is inflammatory. The only reason that our gut digests anything is because there's much that triggers the sudden flow of fluids into the gut, and that's inflammation. Because that one little thing that the medical profession just kind of completely glosses over when they talk about inflammation. There is natural inflammation that must happen, or we don't digest any food. Okay, so another thing that the adrenals do is in moments of crisis, the adrenals do some things and produce some hormones that allow us really to get out there and perform in ways that we normally can't.
Yeah, and this is where I go sideways with people who are claiming adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout, because the major thing is their stress. They're feeling so stressed out, and stress is beating them down, and stress is ruining their life and their health, but their adrenals are burned out. Their adrenals are fatigued. Now, I'm looking at the anatomy, physiology,
That's a total contradiction.
Yeah. The fact that stress is beating them down that bad means that their adrenals are working just fine.
They're firing.
And pumping out the cortisols.
Yeah, they're totally working overtime, pumping out the hormones that allow you to get to the tree and climb it at, you know, at all costs.
It doesn't indicate that the adrenals are slowing down their production of corticosteroids. It's indicating they're pumping out exactly what they're supposed to.
If anything, they're more active. Rather than being fatigued, they're like marathon runners. Well, they are fatigued, aren't they? They're like really going at it. They're like, who is that exercise guy that, his last name was Simmons. You remember?
Richard Simmons.
I mean, that guy, wow, try and stop him. That's our adrenal glands when we're under adrenal stress. They're actually more active and need to be calmed down when you're suffering from adrenal stress. But in that instance, when you are overstressed and your adrenals are producing hormones that increase your blood rate, your heart rate, mm-hmm. increase your blood pressure, increase glucose flow into the muscles. You know, your blood sugar changes and it can sweep dramatically during the night. And anytime you have heart rate, respiration, body temperature, you know, blood pressure, glucose levels swinging dramatically during the night, here again, every cell in your body knows it's happening. And you will be sleepless or sleep disturbed.
Because, right. Yeah.
I mean, how in the world are you ever going to stay asleep and be rested and be restful when all of this is swinging wildly all over during
there's,
the night?
There's been a lot of research into sleep and sleeplessness. And one of the things that has come out recently in the research is the effect on respiratory increase, blood pressure, mm-hmm. heart rate with regard to an individual's ability to fall asleep. And what they discovered is fluctuations, rapid fluctuations in heart rate and respiration mitigate or inhibit the brain's production of dopamine.
The feel-good factor, the relaxation factor, the go-to-sleep
which
factor.
Which, in connection to the dopamine, inhibits the production of melatonin.
Which is deep sleep. Yeah. So these things are connected. You mean the body really is connected?
If the body thinks it has to run from a lion, tiger, or a bear, it's not going to allow its brain to sleep.
No, and it doesn't matter what time it is. I remember when I was a teenager, I would, I had early morning jazz band, and it was like you had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to pick up all the rest of the dudes that lived in your neighborhood and head over to the high school for 6 o'clock jazz band. And so you drag into the place and everybody's asleep and don't want to be there anyway. And
we're supposed to play jazz.
Yeah, we're supposed to play jazz like we love jazz. And, you know, this is the rock era. So
nobody wants to play jazz.
Hates jazz. And here's Mr. John Blake, our music teacher, and he's up there with his cup of coffee. And, you know, he's big in, he's a trumpet player, big into jazz. And he's trying to get us all. It was terrible. And this so stressed me out because I really wanted to be good. So stressed me out that I would go to bed at night, set my alarm clock. I'd go to bed early, and I would turn over and look at that alarm clock every 15 minutes. And that's kind of what your body is doing. Oh, I'm not calmed down yet. I got to go. There's a lion. There's a tornado. There's a noise. There's a ghost. Oh, no, that's Suzanne in the motel. I can just hear it. But you know, all those creaky sounds that are in every horror movie.
Let's paint
movie.
Another picture here, because we have two things we're talking about. We're talking about sleeplessness due to fight or flight, but also sleeplessness due to pH dysregulation.
Right.
Imagine, if you will, you're in an unfamiliar bed. You're not comfortable. You've been traveling for a long time. You have fibromyalgic issues, travel-related fibromyalgic issues in your muscles.
You're sore.
You're
tired.
Hurt. Now, as your pH descends, the probiota link hands and bind themselves to homocysteine fibrous matter all throughout your body. Mm-hmm. And so the slightest movement, by the time it reaches that low, low level, is actually causing strain and micro tearing and stress the tissue.
Even pain. And sometimes,
a lot of which you're not conscious of. You're trying to sleep. You're trying to rest. But how much of your system can rest when there is that much interstitial inflammation going on?
I can even imagine that the discomfort alone from that could be the thing that causes you to have to move so much during the night, and that the movement alone can be kind of disturbing.
Well, you're laying on one side. If you're a side sleeper,
not very comfortable.
You have to roll over to the other side. Well, so the lymphatics suddenly shift.
Right.
Which causes a sudden respiration in the muscle tissues, which causes and triggers. And then eventually, if it's an unfamiliar bed and you're that uncomfortable, you have to do it again.
Yeah.
It will interfere with some of these calming factors that are necessary to produce sufficient dopamine and melatonin.
Well, and then add to the mix, while we're at it, this is dog pile time for sleep, right? Add to the mix that many of your cells do not have the ability that our interstitial fluids and our plasma have of a broad swinging pH. Like the red blood corpuscle has to stay, you know, within what, 7.38 to 7.42?
Yeah, it's very narrow.
Really, really narrow, or you die. That kind of acidosis is suddenly painful and deadly. So your body, judging that, okay, the pH is plummeting, it's tanking, I've got to do something, and so your body robs buffer minerals from other parts of the body, like your red blood corpuscles will dump calcium.
Yeah.
Your bones, your connective tissues, your pancreas, your spleen, it's going to grab minerals from wherever. But anytime that, that any chemical dumps into the bloodstream, there's a sudden change of situational awareness, as you were, as it were, on the part of the cells. It would be like those cells suddenly being in a different room, an unfamiliar place. So sleep disorder is not necessarily ever a mental illness, you know, or necessarily depression. I mean, that's what we automatically
it's
think.
It's not cookie cutter.
No, people.
There's no single cause for sleep issues, sleep disorders, and insomnia.
Yeah, you know, there really isn't. There really isn't.
Another one that comes to mind is the use of our monitors, our screens, our digital tech within an hour before going to bed. Any use of that, because those screens, you really can't discern it with your naked eye. But if you take a look at a screen with a camera, it's flickering.
Right.
There's
it's flashing.
There's a huge amount of photo stimulation triggering the brain. And if that does not have a chance to calm down and process, then the brain is still processing the photo stimulation right up to the point where you put your head on the pillow.
True story. And if you are in front of a computer for long periods of time, your brain, some researchers have found that your brain loses the ability to distinguish between waking and sleeping. It all becomes wake.
All through my teenage years, I was an addicted gamer.
I know, I remember.
I'd play games all day long, all night long, and then I'd complain about not being able to sleep.
Right.
And I remember you rolling your eyes and go, well, if you wouldn't play your game so much, and I never believed it.
Get off the damn computer for 2 seconds during the day and go out and, you know, get a breath of air.
Right. Well, then I decided to grow up a little bit. Not a whole lot, a little bit. And I actually had work to do instead of computer gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I started sleeping better, except on those nights when I was working long on the computer.
Right.
Or if I was checking my phone constantly or watching a movie before bed. I wouldn't sleep, and it felt like I was back to when I was a teenager,
yeah,
because I was a chronic insomniac as a teenager.
Laying there in the bed staring at the ceiling, even though it's dark and you're calm and it's quiet and you're restful, you're staring at the ceiling. I wasn't aware of the fact that you can't see a computer screen unless it is off and on and off and on. I didn't know that. I knew that there was a flicker because even in the old days when you watched a movie – or a TV series, and there was a television in the scene. You remember how it moved up and down?
Yep.
And I also went, what the heck? You know, what's going on there? Why can't you focus on that and make it stand still? Well,
you wouldn't see anything if you did.
That's a camera wigging out like our minds sometimes wig out when it comes to staring too long at the at a computer terminal. So there's an energy issue because light is non-ionizing electromagnetic energy. Well, it is.
It's ionizing in sufficient concentration.
It's not it's non-ionizing. It is not gamma.
This is debatable.
Yeah, whatever. You and your sci-fi. Let's go to another thing that we saw in Suzanne's Blood. So, okay, we see the death, the walking dead in Suzanne's Blood. Yeah.
Glad I could help.
He says. So we see these, and you can. It's not all over in the blood because you've got all kinds of the smaller ones, but you can see how it's an evidence that the blood has that the serum, not the blood cells, but the serum has tanked during the night, and now the body is working hard to buffer those up because they can't hold their bonds when the pH starts to come up. So they'll throw some bicarbonate calcium bicarbonate or other types of bicarbonate into the serum, and they break apart back into those tiny little dancing dots that do such good work. But not all of them get there. So we're seeing evidences of a pretty low drop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember, what was your pH when we tested your pH by the strip?
6.6.
Well, 6.6.
It was between 6.6 and 6.7.
Okay, so right there, right at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
or I'm sorry, I guess you'd say it's right at the bottom of the safe zone. It's just under the safe zone where fibrin would begin to form up.
Yeah.
And we did see fibrin.
Mm-hmm.
So after going through the, after having the meal, the...
And we're testing saliva, by the way.
Right. So after having the acid-forming meal, after being fatigued and worn out and stressed
mm-hmm.
and in a new place, the whole situation awareness is firing. Because,
and 2 weeks of it.
Yeah, it's not your home. It's not where you would prefer to be asleep. So there's all these elements happening, right? Then you get up and what'd you have for breakfast?
Oh, hamburger, broccoli, and onion.
Hamburger, broccoli, and onion.
So basically what you had for dinner.
Yeah, so you just mimicked the same thing that you had for dinner. And so the breakfast is not alkalizing, so the body has to revert to its own buffer minerals. And that's okay, we're made for that.
Mm-hmm.
We do that all the time. But if it happens too often, then the pH doesn't quite come up. And you got to work that pH up into that neutral, safe, sweet zone. Or you continue to build these larger systems that are really only made to compost you. And you really shouldn't be turning into compost while you're still alive. I need to really stress this point. I just really feel the need right now to stress the point that you should not turn into soil before you're dead. I don't know how to emphasize this more. When you're walking around and breathing in and out, you really don't want to be making soil inside you, right? Okay. That's supposed to be happening outside you. Suzanne pulls out the greens and she starts to eat.
I've been eating
the whole time. Alkalizing before you go to bed tonight. Okay, so you have a breakfast that is not alkalizing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something you and I do a lot. I mean, we get up and what?
Sometimes the day is so hectic, we have it scheduled so tightly that we get busy with all of our prep beforehand, and usually I just forget.
Well,
I don't feel hungry until later anyway, and I just forget that I need to be doing something alkalizing.
Yeah.
Because I have so much else on my plate.
Well, and for one thing, for a lot of us, a meal in the morning is the worst possible time to eat.
Yeah.
I just don't like to eat in the morning, and what I need in the morning is protein.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I do not feel like I have got any energy at all. So what we do, Jonathan and I, we historically will drink some coffee, which is way alkalizing, right? What are you laughing at?
Bullshit alert. The Star Trek claxon.
Yeah. Exterminate. It is not. I'll even put some salt in my coffee, but that's not enough to make it alkalizing. And what is it that's so acid forming in coffee?
Tannic acid.
That's right. I mean, back there was
It doesn't matter how low acid your coffee is. The food itself is so full of the stuff.
What are you going to do?
That it overruns our body's natural citric acid cycle, the Krebs cycle.
Yeah, so it's true. Coffee is very acid forming.
Yeah.
But I have to, there's got to be a quid pro quo here, because coffee is a very strong, abundant,
mm-hmm.
dark colored antioxidant.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from maybe chocolate.
You have to add that or we'll smack you upside.
I know, I'm getting threatening looks from all directions, all around the world right now.
Do not take away our coffee.
But it is a wonderful antioxidant.
Uh-huh.
And for myself, it is a very mild diuretic, which helps me with my particular heart condition and my blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather take that than something else. So here again, just like eating the piece of meat, we've got to think in terms of balancing that tannic acid with something that's alkalizing. And going back to tannic acid, there was a time when out in Utah, remember, you probably remember this, when people, you know, Chief Cloudpiler, he's Big Chief Namenha. So they'd find a dead animal on the side of the road. Chief Cloudpiler will want that.
Oh, I remember that.
Where you get people driving in your driveway with dead animals.
It was horrific.
Hello, Chief Cloudpiler, look what I have for you. And he opens the trunk and it's a big dead bald eagle hit by a truck or it's a badger. Yeah, you want to skin this badger.
And they had taken a piece off of it to keep for themselves.
Yeah, here's a heap big medicine, Chief Cloudpiler. make him medicine bundle with badger skin. Okay, so so I did some tanning, and I experimented with what really does tan, because I read the books, and, you know, I read about the chemicals that are used now to tan. Yeah. And that just really did not excite me. That looked really toxic stuff. So I never used any of those toxic stuff. So I got into some of the fringe element wacko tanning guides. And one of the things to make a deep, rich, brown, hard tan is coffee.
I've read about that.
So you take all the fats and you defat it and you put this in coffee. If you want a hard, hard tissue to form. So, to kind of make like shoe leather, not the upper, but the soles. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I found. And I tried it. And sure enough, it's true. And then I got to thinking, oh, my gosh. When we put that in our body, how much like sticking that hide in the coffee.
I'm going to wick-slap you. I like my coffee.
Wick-slap. So yeah, we got to balance that with what it takes to neutralize that coffee acid.
And,
so we get up,
and understanding what that tannic acid does to the gut, we have to make sure that we're also tending our intestines.
Lots of vegetables.
Yep.
Lots of emollients, natural plant emollients.
Yep.
Lots of mucilaginous vegetables. All vegetables have mucilage in them, so lots of them, even in low degrees, low level mucilage is going to help that.
Right.
Okay, so then what do we add to the coffee in the morning? Usually eggs.
Not in the coffee.
No, I mean to our breakfast. You know, we'll cook an egg.
A couple of eggs usually.
Because everybody knows eggs are for breakfast, right?
I like them.
That's when we eat our eggs. We'll fry our eggs. And we'll cook some toast.
Yeah.
And toast, I don't care what the British say, toast needs to be dry and hard on one side and sopping wet with butter on the other side, right?
We're really only toasting it so we get the toasty flavor. We don't really want crispy bread.
I don't know. John Lennon, John Lennon was famous for asking a question or making a statement. I don't understand you Americans. You cook, you bake your bread, and then you bake it again to make it toast, and then you put butter on it to make it gooey. Okay, so now we got coffee. We got fried eggs.
Mm-hmm.
We got
Twice cooked bread,
white bread, Wonder Bread with butter.
We don't buy Wonder Bread.
Okay, so we take Jeshua's really, really nice sourdough bread.
He makes a nice
bread. And we
bread.
Just slather about, oh gosh, 4 tablespoons of butter on there.
I see nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong with that at all. No, it's good fats, good fats. And then what do we do to alkalize? I mean, because there's no doubt about it. If you are using real food and good food, well, there's protein and fats. You're putting real proteins and real fats in there. It is real food, and that satisfies the rule, right? Eat real food. Know what you're eating. But know also what you are eating, your food choices, are doing to your whole organism.
Mm-hmm.
Eating good fats. What's the big deal about eating good fats, right? Well, obviously, we don't eat good fats. We eat garbage fats. And so our fat metabolism is upside down as a nation, as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Our fat metabolism is screwed. So putting in the good fats, the right fats, the fats that our bodies actually evolved to partake of throughout the millennium, through the generations, all generations of time, you know, put those fats back in, and it's going to tend to balance our fat metabolism, but unfortunately at a cost. We have to be mindful of the collateral cost.
Mm-hmm.
The collateral cost is it's acid forming.
Yep.
So here we are. We get in the car. We've had our protein-rich, fatty, and tannic acid-rich diet or breakfast. We get in the car, and we travel to work an hour and a half.
Yeah.
We get to work, and we get there just in time, and our first people come in, and we spend time all the way to lunchtime, and we are starving and dragging.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're tired. So then we go out, and we have some lunch. And if we're smart, by that time we've thought about it. We better get some alkalizing vegetables in us, right? Because Chief Lovebinder said so.
General Tso's chicken is so good.
I know. So we go have something that is acid forming. So by the time the end of the day comes, we still have to travel home. So we'll either stop and we'll have something to eat at a restaurant.
Which is never good.
It never is, because
no item on a restaurant menu, even the salads on a restaurant menu, will not be good.
Well, and even if they say they're good, there's no way to check it out unless you're like in Portland, Portlandia style, and that takes 5 years, right? In polygamous marriage, and you've seen that episode, right? I love that episode of Portlandia, but. Restaurant food is road food, and it's once in a while thing. It's only ever once in a while thing. So then we get home.
Makes for a good treat now and then.
When we get home and our pH is tanked, and it's now approaching because
we're walking dead, essentially.
Yeah,
and we feel it usually.
Our pH is tanked. We watch a little TV, try to calm down, you know, and then we go to bed. And we lay there. We either lay there with our eyes wide open, staring at the ceiling, or our sleep is disturbed all night long. It's totally understandable, and it's something that we did all day long. In the morning, we should have at least as much vegetable matter in our breakfast as we have protein, and it can't be overcooked vegetable matter.
Right, right. And when we remember to do this, we have more energy in the morning. All through to the afternoon.
Right, and then
we make good choices when we are more apt to make better choices in the afternoon.
It's too true. Yeah.
Because we've geared ourselves with a higher pH balance from the beginning, and we don't feel the same energy drain that causes us to instinctively want more protein, more fat, and more sugar.
Right.
The high energy foods.
No matter how good your diet is in the morning, you're going to be the most acid that you're going to be during any other time of the day. In the morning, you've got to get your pH up and get a really good starting level for the rest of the day. So then everything you do the rest of the day is kind of a top up.
Mm-hmm.
So that even though we fluctuate up and down in pH, the stress, and there's all kinds of
coffee
stuff
throughout
the day.
You can't take my coffee away.
But if you're starting at a good starting point and you're doing things periodically during the day to bump up that ionic mineral level, then you're going to get to the end of the day and your commute back to home and you have your dinner and you're going to be at the end of the day and you're not going to be tanking to begin with. You get to start over in the morning, but at least you don't get lower and lower and lower. It's amazing. Sometimes in our seminars, we'll pass the pH test strip around, and bear in mind the pH test strip is orange in color.
Mm-hmm.
That's a base pH of 5.0.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not really designed to change below that point.
No.
They're not. They'll stay the same color. We don't know how really low it is, but if no color change is made on these pH tests,
you know it's 5.0 or lower.
Or lower, 5.0 or lower. Yeah. And we'll pass it around, and they'll be green, and they'll be blue-green. And here and there, you'll get a person who doesn't change the color of the pH test strip. And that is alarming. Because what do you say?
We need to have a talk after the meeting.
I mean, do you realize, ma'am, that if we were to take out your blood right now and put a cucumber in it, it would pickle? I mean, for real. We used to make vinegar for a living, and it was, you know, we wanted to get it down more like around 4.6, 4.8, but at 5.0 at a minimum, or at a maximum, you could still make a pickle. And that's the person's saliva. And so the person's saliva is generally just 1/10 of 1 point, pH point,
mm-hmm.
lower than the plasma or interstitial fluids. So it's amazing. We're sitting there looking at this person and knowing what we do by, you know, how much work we do with a dark field microscope, knowing what we know about what's going on in the body when the pH is that low. You're looking at somebody on the chair in front of you, trying to teach them how to better eat, how to better manage their health and regain health, maintain health, and it's distracting. You have to constantly be looking at this person to see when the skin starts falling off. You know, raw, and everybody run when the zombie emerges. Because this is, you know, this is literally The Walking Dead, and it's frightening.
Not Resident Evil, back on task.
Back on task, sorry. But it's, you know, the pH is a big issue in sleep, in sleeplessness and in disturbed sleep. But mm-hmm. it's not the only thing that we see a lot of. You can go to your medical doctor and you can get blood panels.
Mm-hmm.
And your blood panels for, say, hematocrit, the number of red blood cells you have, and your hemoglobin levels and your iron, they can come in right along in the normal range. And before they can say that you're anemic, it has to be way outside the normal range.
Right.
When we look at the blood, we can actually see an approaching anemia in time to stop it from happening before a medical doctor would ever call it anemia.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, sometimes we see the signs of anemia in the living blood. And invariably, we have the interview,
mm-hmm.
and we get lots and lots of information. We engage in deep observation. We get as much information as possible. And invariably, when we see a person's blood and it has all the signs of anemia, I mean, not the approaching anemia, which is so common, but the mm-hmm. real honest to goodness thing, they will already have told us that they don't sleep well, and that they're always tired and fatigued, and they feel exhausted when they go to bed,
yeah.
but then they can't sleep when they get there. Or when they do sleep, it is absolute exhaustion, and they're mm-hmm. sleeping out of exhaustion. They don't sleep well. They wake up, and they're still tired. They're not rested after sleep, and that's an important issue. So let's review again why the red blood cell is shaped the way it is. Why is the red blood cell shaped the way it is?
So it can move through the capillaries.
So capillaries, you know, as you're, let's start from the heart.
Okay.
You have this great big artery, and it's pumping vast amounts of blood, and it's under great pressure.
Mm-hmm.
As it moves out further and further and further away from the heart, the arteries reduce and spread out, fan out, branch out, reduce in diameter until
mm-hmm.
finally into the capillaries, these little red blood cells go. And the capillaries then, I mean, it gets to a certain point where it's actually smaller in diameter than the red blood cell.
Right.
But you've got this amazing back pressure behind it, and the heart is really pumping hard, and it pushes those little suckers right through that area. And in order to get through the capillary, it literally has to shrink. It has to get smaller, or they're just going to plug like a cork. You know, and when a blood vessel plugs and there's pressure against it,
mm-hmm.
your heart infarcts. I know that sounds terrible, doesn't it?
It's a nice word.
Oh, right? My heart infarcted.
No.
Is that a word?
Infarcted?
Yeah, it is.
Infarcted.
Infarcted. Infarcticated?
It's not infarcted.
It's farctumicated?
It's infarct.
It's infarct. Okay. It causes infarction. It does. And that is, you know, very often something that kills you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're designed to lose something going through in order to become smaller. And what they lose is oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really cool because the oxygen flows out then where it's actually taken into the fluid, into the serum, and that's really how our cells take on oxygen. It isn't because the capillaries are all connected in some way with a valve to our cells.
No,
the oxygen flows out into the serum, and it by diffusion,
mm-hmm.
Actually enters the oxygen receptor sites of the cells.
This begins
cellular respiration.
Yeah, this is why they can plug those little monitors on your finger and gauge serum oxygenation just through the surface of your skin.
Yeah, from the outside. Yeah,
because they're measuring oxygenation within capillary tissue,
right.
Capillary and and fascial.
How much oxygen is actually being transported? So then, as it passes through the capillary, the capillaries get wider on the venous side, and there's not as much pressure on that side. There doesn't need to be that much pressure on the side. It's coming back. But the capillaries are allowed to grow back to their normal size. And when they do, they take on another oxygen compound. You know what? What did I say?
Capillaries.
Not the capillary. The corpuscle, the red blood cell.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes on another oxygen compound. And we don't think about the waste gas that we produce as an oxygen compound, but it really is.
Mm-hmm.
And the red blood corpuscle has that little hemoglobin packet that is really heavy with iron and has such a capacity to take on and carry oxygen compounds. So carbon dioxide mm-hmm. is taken on as it grows back to its normal size on the other side, carries it to the lung, and we still don't know what triggers the red blood cell to give up that carbon dioxide in the lung so that we can expel it in the breath. That is something that's still not known. I'm not sure it's relevant to this discussion, but someday I'd like to ask those five guys who came up with the idea. 5 to 7 small working group works better than large. I'm going to get that working group together.
It's half a pantheon.
Yeah. But anyway, that is the purpose of the shape of the red blood cell. And so sometimes, well, actually very often lately, we're seeing red blood cells under the microvideography that are too large.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that pressure pushes it through the capillary, they don't shrink uniformly and give off oxygen. They fold over.
Mm-hmm.
They fold over on themselves, and that actually exposes much less surface area to the capillary wall. And that squeezes down. You end up losing about 50% of the oxygen. So that great big cell
mm-hmm.
is only able to give 50% of the normal blood cells oxygen to the tissues. We also see usually with those larger cells that are much too small. And what's the problem with those?
Some of those may not be compressed by the capillary at all.
Yeah, they just whoosh right on through. I read this in a hematology textbook, college hematology textbook. The good professor actually described it as red blood corpuscles whooshing through. This is a very technical medical term, the whooshing.
The whoosh.
And it's the whooshing through of those anisocytosis cells doesn't allow any oxygen to
mm-hmm.
change. So there's a red blood corpuscle that takes up the space of a red blood mm-hmm. corpuscle so and doesn't give any oxygen. So
right.
you can have in your panel, your blood test,
an appropriate blood
number.
Cell count.
Oh yes. Yeah, you no problem. You have plenty of red blood cells and
mm-hmm.
la la la, but the size of it is so small that it can't give up oxygen. So it's just whooshing. It's whooshing cells. When you couple that with the next thing we see very often, that's anisocytosis,
uh-huh.
and we see that a lot. Couple that with the next thing we see often with anisocytosis is the annulocyte. And under dark field microscopy, the annulocyte literally looks like a bullseye.
It's very demonstrative.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a red blood cell that somebody took a marker and drew a bullseye on it.
Yeah.
They lack enough heme in the hemoglobin molecule to hold up the mm-hmm. cell wall itself, and light gets in there and reflects back and forth, and we get to see that puddle of light in the center
mm-hmm.
of the cell. When you have all three of those things, your oxygen delivery to the cells is sometimes as much as 50% or more reduced. And so your body, knowing
mm-hmm.
itself better than anything, actually sends signals to other parts of the body that translate in the end to sit down.
Or lie down.
Fall down.
Yeah.
Sit down, lie down, fall down, go down. The body tells the other members, the body whole, tells the other members or signals to the other members with fatigue,
mm-hmm.
absolute fatigue, to stop doing anything because you're not getting enough oxygen. But what's very, very interesting is that more often than not, a symptom of anemia is not just fatigue. They feel tired all the time.
And need to sleep all the time.
Yeah, you've got to go to sleep. I mean, something's got to give. I can't go on this way. But the other significant, one of the other significant symptoms is sleeplessness. You're dog tired and you just don't have the energy. You're literally fatigued, like you just walked up a mountain, but you can't go to sleep or your sleep is disturbed.
Now, why would that be if the anemia and the anisocytosis is causing such an acute fatigue throughout your body? Why would you not be able to sleep after you've actually done what your body said and lie down and try to get some rest?
I don't know. Why?
I do.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
Give us a clue.
It actually has to do with our human instinct to breathe. With an oxygen reduction due to anemia or anisocytosis or both, our oxygen levels in the brain are already a certain level below normal.
Right.
When we sleep, our respiration slows and decreases. Oxygenation is reduced naturally by sleep. Now, if it goes to a certain point, we have this natural reflex that causes our body to gasp or inhale.
Wake up.
Which will throw us right out of a sleep cycle.
You have to wake up. When you get too relaxed, you're not getting enough oxygen, even if you're not anemic, and you wake up.
I do this in guided meditation. I'll be trying to get into deep muscle relaxation and forget to breathe.
Oh my gosh, everybody else in the room is totally relaxed, and Jonathan goes, and wakes up, and everybody's out of it. It's so hard. Gas. And then we all look up, what is his problem?
But in lesser degrees, when someone is lying, resting, trying to sleep, their respiration drops, it slows down, and then there's that trigger. If it falls too low, they have to wake up. Their brain forces them to wake up because it's being deprived of
your
oxygen.
Sleep must be disturbed in order to get more oxygen.
It's a survival mechanism.
And then there's those who simply cannot sleep. And I believe that the reason for that is tied to what you just described. The body knowing that will happen prevents you from sleeping in the first place so that you'll be awake and continue to breathe more deeply. But you have to be sitting, lying, or whatever. You can't be out, you know.
Because the rest of your system
mowing the field because you're using up the oxygen. You're just not doing well enough. Your oxygenation is not happening. Mm. So these are things to think about in terms of when we hear people say adrenal burnout or adrenal fatigue or adrenal syndrome.
Don't buy it. Find out what's really going on.
Yeah,
those catchphrases are extremely faddish and don't actually say anything about what's happening physiologically.
Right, or they're saying the opposite and you're believing, you know, they're actually contradicting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you say adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout is what's causing your fatigue, it isn't. It would be doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anemia.
Mm-hmm.
Or approaching anemia, anytime I see, or you or I see, or any of our practitioners see under the microscope, anisocytosis coupled with anulocytes, the target cells,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, reasonably to be expected that they will be benefited by adding somehow to their intake those building blocks that the bone marrow needs to build red blood cells. And you can correct the condition in 90 to 120 days, roughly the amount of time it takes to replace all your red blood cells.
Right.
So that's pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You have a serious condition like this, to be able to correct that is a really good thing. And so I've been asked by people, actually, I've been asked by Suzanne to, you know, give everybody, you know, what's your favorite brand of these things, because we want to get people to take vitamin B12,
mm-hmm.
folic acid or a folate of some kind, and iron. And so I'm constantly being, well, what's your favorite? Which one do you recommend? And blah blah blah.
8 million to choose from.
I know, she went down to the health food store. I said, you're smart. You're an adult. Go down to the health food store and choose one. Yeah, and choose one. So, you know, she ran into the same problem that everybody's going to run into universally across the board. So you go to the health food store and you try to find an a supplement for blood, for iron, for anemia, that is going to serve you the best. And the one that you chose is not one that I would have chosen. And I hesitate deciding on a favorite brand. And I've done this before. And the danger, the risk that I face is that these blessed manufacturing companies, this is not really how I characterize them when I'm alone in my closet. they change, you know, their formulas as often as you or I change our underwear. It's just really frustrating to recommend a type of iron, for example, and mm-hmm. come to find out, you know, when someone calls me up and says, did you know that there's this in that supplement that you told me to swallow? I mean, what kind of a naturopath are you anyway? That's poison, and you know it. I'm never going to talk to you again. It's very frustrating to find out, you know, that something that you liked 8 months ago is now inedible. Right. I've run into this over and over. But probably not as frustrating as going to a health food store and not being able to find something of value. So rather than say,
I don't even go to health food stores. Yeah, I know. I have to.
But see, as apothecary, we make remedies, we make sacraments, but there are some things we simply can't make.
Like an iron supplement.
I mean,
I haven't quite figured that one out.
Right. When you need an iron supplement, you need to bump your iron up quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eating more spinach is helpful in maintaining a healthy iron level. But when you're deficient, you need to bump up quickly, not take 6 months to finally get up to a normal level. It just doesn't work that way, okay? So here is an iron that on the label, on the box, iron is in great big letters. Now, in smaller red letters, it says probiotic cultured nutrients. So what am I really buying here? What I'm going to try and do with this product, and you are going to take this back and trade it in, right, for something real?
It was the only one that had the right kind of iron in it.
We're looking for a certain kind of iron because there are
fumarate.
Yeah, there are types of iron that'll just pack you solid. It really does constipate. Iron is one of those supplements you want to get the right kind, and so I've mentioned that, but it's not enough information, obviously. So on the front of this, we've got some great marketing. It says Iron Food Complex, probiotic cultured nutrients, and it's ICS, which is certified organic, made with organic vegetables and herbs. Everything about this is wonderful. It's huge. It's gigantic. Whole food cultured iron and supporting nutrients for blood health. Really, really good. Really good. Really good. Really, really, really good. It's huge. And it's the best.
No more channeling Baldwin.
He's the best president ever. He's the best presidency ever. Most productive. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So can be taken on an empty stomach. Well, that's huge, right? Dietary supplement. So that's the front page. Let's turn the page to the next page because, you know, you've got a lot of – this is in a box
mm-hmm.
with a bottle in the box. You've got a lot of real estate to do marketing, and that's what we do. It says health. So your mind is, and down at the bottom it says gluten-free.
Oh, we might as well buy it now. Yep.
Well, when has iron not been gluten-free? What the heck?
When eggs went gluten-free is when the iron went
gluten-free. When eggs went gluten-free? You're killing me. Just shoot me now, okay? And so that has become, and it's the health is really big. The gluten-free is small.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same color as the word health. Health, gluten-free, mm-hmm. gluten-free health. You get the picture here.
Clever.
Inside that subtle, not even so subtle, inside that not so subtle subliminal suggestion, we read cultured, remember this is iron,
mm-hmm.
cultured whole food. Cultured whole food, and it's an iron supplement. So this is telling you that this is like eating spinach instead of just taking a pill.
Sure.
Okay. Delivers essential nutrients in a safe and active form within the infinite complexity of food. Okay, now. Within the infinite complexity of food. It's huge. Let's go to that. That's bull crap, because the iron here was made in a vat.
Yeah.
Okay. It was created in a laboratory.
The vast majority of vitamins and minerals on the market are derived from the bacterial or fungal waste products of manufacturing.
Yeah, and
the vast majority of your supplicants don't have a clue.
That's true, but our practitioners should. Okay. But I, you know, I send this poor supplicant to the grocery to the health food store because she's an adult. She should know how to read, right? But the things that you read are deceptive.
Well,
that's true. She didn't have her reading glasses, so that's, you know. But it's still blood health support. Blood health support. Whole food cultured iron is combined with 5 blood bonding vitamins and minerals to support healthy hemoglobin and myoglobin levels. And there's an asterisk. Do you know what that means?
Read further. But don't bother. We want you to buy this.
No, it means this is a lie. I'm going to turn over to the other side and find out which of those vitamins are blood bonding vitamins. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of a blood bonding vitamin before? What does that mean? It binds the blood together or that it bonds to blood? Well, I don't want the vitamin to bond to my blood. I want it to go into my cells. I don't want it to stay in my blood. What are we trying to enhance when we're trying to build the blood? The blood cells?
No, the
marrow. The manufacture of the blood. So, okay, I do not have my reading glasses on, so I can't see. So the vitamins that are in here are vitamin C as ascorbic acid from culture media.
It's yeast.
It's E. coli.
Right, yeah.
Huge vats of E. coli that produce these massive amounts of ascorbic acid. And sometimes it's aspergillus mold.
Uh-huh.
And very often it's some of the fungals. And it's just crazy.
Oh, my gosh,
but
this
it says
is good marketing.
From culture media, which means you've got a semi-truck-sized vat just churning away like it's a huge intestine making ascorbic acid, and then they skim that off, purify it, and they put it in here. But that's a blood bonding vitamin, right? Because what I'm going to read here are the vitamins.
Right, yeah.
They're not bound to the iron in any way. Uh-huh. The iron's just folded into this, okay? Vitamin E as D-alpha-tocopherol acetate from culture media,
which means it comes from the same place as your average.
And then there's folate as folic acid from culture media.
These are all from vats.
These are all laboratory vats.
Yeah.
Vitamin B12.
None of these are from Whole Foods.
Yeah. I can never say this. Cyanocobalamin from culture medium. Iron as ferrous fumarate from culture media. Now, we asked you to go to the health food store and get an iron that was ferrous
fumarate
because it really is absorbed easier and better into the bloodstream and doesn't cause so much of the constipation that iron does.
It's an iron bound to a fumaric acid
right.
molecule, which the body uses fumaric acid for all kinds
of
awesome things.
Oh, loves it. So binding,
especially in conjunction with folic acid.
Yeah, see, now that's smart. That's a smart thing. I'm not denigrating that at all. But I also know that iron is not chelated in culture media. Okay, we don't even know now what's being talked about here because it's irrelevant. It's not done. Iron is bound to fumaric acid by taking powdered fumaric acid and powdered iron and folding it together.
Under high temperatures.
They don't do that.
Oh, they don't do that?
No, in manufacture, it's just folded together into a similar powder. And then, of course, it's in a liquid, so it all comes together. Okay, zinc is not a vitamin, so, and neither is iron. But that vitamin B12, folate, and vitamin E and vitamin C are supposed to be blood bonding.
From Whole Foods.
Whole food blood bonding vitamin, and it's supposed to be a whole food complex from culture media. Now, I don't remember the last time I put you know, I reached into my laboratory culture media in the kitchen and put that in my cream of mushroom soup. I just don't remember using that stuff out of my septic tank in soup, because that's essentially what we're doing here. We are mimicking an intestine, only large, in a laboratory. And that's how all the vitamins are made that are not derived from petroleum. So we want the vitamins that are not, I'm not saying that these are bad vitamins, but come on, be honest in how you're describing them. Then it goes on to give you stress and energy support from culture media. So it's organic schisandra berry, organic maca root, and organic chamomile flower from culture media.
So it's kombucha.
So what they're doing is they're digesting it.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally digesting it. They are fermenting this, and we're supposed to believe that there's any of the chemistry left in its whole food form. We have no idea what food, what form it is. Just because they say it's a whole food, we're going to have to believe it, because now this is all from culture media. So then we get digestive support blend from culture media. Organic aloe leaf. Aloe happens to be a strong laxative.
Stronger when it's cultured.
Right.
When it's fermented.
Organic peppermint leaf reduces gas.
Mm-hmm.
Organic coriander seed reduces gas.
Mm-hmm.
Organic cardamom seed reduces gas.
Yeah.
Organic artichoke leaf controls some of the gallbladder action that produces griping or gripping pain. Okay, so then we've got ginger, reduces gas. Organic turmeric, which reduces inflammation and reduces in the digestive tract, reduces gas.
Yep.
And then more organic ginger, because the first ginger wasn't organic. And organic turmeric, because the organic turmeric above wasn't organic, or I'm not sure what's going on here. We got two sets of organic turmeric. And then there's a whole big long list, a whole paragraph of additives, including wax, you know, stuff like, which I can hardly read, lactic acid, bacteria, you know, Acidophilus bifidum. So
your basic probiotic,
you know,
there's probiotic
in here, and then there's alfalfa powder, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice filler. And, you know, then there's also a whole bunch of enzyme in this so that you don't have to digest after all.
Right.
Because you're going to need it after all of this. Your regular digestion is simply not going to work to make this stuff useful at all.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a really good marketing. You know, and you turn the box all the way around, and the big letters on the top, it says holistic. Well, help me out here. What's the definition of holistic?
Depends on who you talk to.
Does holistic mean natural?
Not necessarily.
No, holistic means that it treats the body, the mind, and the soul, or the spirit. Takes it into account all these things. There's nothing holistic about this. It's probiotic cultured, non-GMO project verified, whole food complexed. And they have a whole bunch of certification labels on here.
Which enzymes do they have?
I don't remember. I can't read it.
Let me see.
Earlier. Go through it. But, you know, this is a whole food. It's supposed to cover all the bases. But what's more important to me is look at the dosage of iron. And you said it yourself, Suzanne, by the time you take a therapeutic dose to
9 milligrams.
Yeah, to get any kind of improvement for anemia.
You'd have to take 4 of these.
Yeah, if you're say for example you're an iron deficiency.
4 of these a day.
If you have an iron deficiency anemia, you're gonna want to take 60 to 100 milligrams a day. Not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 60 to 100 milligrams, you get over that, you start pushing the envelope of too much iron at once, and the symptoms are horrifying.
About a week.
So this thing might last you a week.
Any tablet.
And how much did it cost you?
Well, $22.
$22 for a week. For a week. And most of the stuff in there is irrelevant. it's counterproductive.
And I mean, that's why it's so expensive.
Yeah. But it's got great packaging. It's got great, great marketing. In fact, on the front of it, it has a plant that is not found in the formula. And I'm not sure what that's all about.
That's Schisandra.
Is that?
And the white flowers are chamomile.
Oh, there we go.
And the green leaves are mint.
I was thinking that that was hawthorn berry. From this far back, it looks like hawthorn berry. So I stand corrected. Those plants are in there from Culture Medium. Go to the health food store and look for an iron that is chelated to either an amino acid combined to an amino acid or a mineral. I like personally iron that's iron fumarate.
Mm-hmm.
And the best one that we found that we like is from, and you mentioned it.
I don't like it. If you do online shopping, I did find on Vitacost, Vitacost brand iron. And they just call it iron.
It's a fumarate.
It's ferrous fumarate, and it has the least amount of additives that I found in any product so far.
Right.
So there's my nutraceutical promotional spiel for the month.
So look for, if you're going for iron fumarate, which is what I like the most, but there's other kinds of iron. Just look for one that is bound, that is not elemental ferrous.
And isn't loaded with all kinds
garbage
of other stuff. If you're going for a vitamin or a mineral, get one that is the vitamin and mineral, not loaded with all the other blah, blah, blah.
Get vitamin B12. Get a folate.
Which form of vitamin B12?
They all come from the same place.
No, they don't. There's a whole bunch of different, but you know what? Get vitamin B12. None of them are actually any better. They're just many different sources.
Oh, yeah.
The folates. None of them are better. There's not a king folate and a pauper folate. Get folic acid, and it comes in many different forms. But get, if you're going to buy supplements, get the supplement itself, not the manufacturer's decision on what is better for you. Then take those home and use them as a supplement to your food.
And you want them in liquid.
I would rather they be in liquid because it's less constipating. And besides that, you know how I feel about capsules.
Yeah.
Especially the damn veggie capsules. You know how I feel about veggie caps. Hypromelose is not something to put in the body, and that's your vegan influence on naturopathic medicine and herbalism is the introduction of the veggie cap.
At least this one's just this tablet's just based in resin and wax.
Resin and wax.
Yeah.
That's better. So put the glue in there. Eat glue. Know what you are buying internally. You know, the rule for food is eat real food, mostly plant, not all plant, but mostly plant, and not too much. The rule in supplements, when you go to buy them, is know the supplement you want and buy the real supplement. And, you know, make it the real thing, not a whole bunch of stuff added to it to make it look like it's going, you know, that means that you have to believe the marketing.
Yeah. What all we wanted out of this was the iron. We didn't need anything else in the bottle. Nothing else in it. All we wanted was the iron.
Right. And so here's an iron complex. It has vitamin B12 and it has folic acid, but it doesn't have the amounts that I would recommend. In fact, it has a great deal more vitamin B12 than I would recommend.
And it has so little
iron.
It has so little iron, and it's got all these other ingredients, none of which in a therapeutic dose. So they're not doing you any good in this product.
Well,
anyway,
it might be good, but it's a waste of your resources.
Yeah.
Go and get the supplement and get just the supplement. Know what you're taking. Take the time to understand what you're taking and buy what you need. So our practitioners need to take that same advice. Take the time to understand the supplements that you're going to be telling people to go get, and then of course be more mindful about it than I was in sending somebody to a health food store, because it's a dang, it's a foreign country in the health food store anymore.
Yeah.
It really is alien ground in a health food store. Okay, so that's our rant for tonight. Here we go again. I hope you've got something out of it. Understanding sleeplessness, it is more than depression. It's more than stress. It can be a number of different things. And hope you stay well. Walk sacred. This is Chief Cloud Piler and Chief Willa Mutkin. See you next time.